This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Coming up later in the show, a look at Northside's past, present, and future. First up, thanks to an abundance of fossils and minerals, southwestern Ohio, northern Kentucky, and eastern Indiana attract collectors from around the world. This weekend, scientists and hobbyists can learn more about fossil and rock collecting at GeoFair at the Sharonville Convention Center. Joining us to explore the world of fossils, rocks, and minerals are Miami University Department of Geology and Environmental Earth Science Professor of Mineralogy, Dr. Jack Rakeven, Jack Kalmeyer, President of Dry Dredgers, an Association of Amateur Geologists and Fossil Collectors, and Dry Dredgers Past President Greg Hand. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Greg, Jack, John, thank you for being here this afternoon. You know, the Tri-State does have this reputation for having a lot of fossils and minerals. How does this area compare to other parts of the country?
We're very fortunate in having a wealth of fossils here. We're world famous, actually, for how much material we have in the fossil realm, anyway, in Cincinnati. This area, 450 million years ago, was an inland sea, maybe up to 200 feet deep, and it was tropical. So we have all kinds of little tropical animals that were, of course, very ancient and all extinct at this point in time. So fortunately, with geology and the building of mountains and whatnot, all the sediment's been pushed up and eroded away, so it exposes this material here in Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm. John, what about from a mineral standpoint?
So the Cincinnati area, which is obviously prolific in terms of fossils, there are minerals found here, but you have to go a little farther afield to find good mineral deposits. The closest to us here is in the Finley Arch, which stretches just north of Dayton all the way up into southern Michigan. And that area is very famous, probably the most famous area in Ohio for mineral specimens. And then as you head west into Indiana, and in particularly in Illinois and Kentucky, we've got a plethora of mineral deposits. Probably the most important type is known as a Mississippi Valley type deposit, obviously named for the Mississippi Drainage Valley. And this is one of the world's premier areas for minerals such as galena, sphalerite, the ore minerals for lead and zinc in these deposits, but also the gangue minerals. Gangue is a type of mineral that is not economic other than to mineral collectors or dealers, but produce beautiful specimens such as fluorite and calcite and quartz. And this area is world famous for the MVT type of deposits that we have here.
Okay. Greg, what kind of fossils is the area famous for? What do you commonly find around here?
When people – Jack's going to be upset with this because he really likes a class of animals called echinoderms, starfish.
Okay.
But when people come to the meeting, what they always want to collect is a trilobite.
Mm-hmm.
When you talk to people in Cincinnati about fossils, trilobite is the first thing. And they were kind of the top of the food chain. In this shallow sea that we were talking about, they're related to crabs, they're related to lobsters, they're an arthropod like that, and they can get quite large. There are some on exhibit at the Museum Center and out at Caesar Creek that are 2 feet long, even longer. Generally, you can find them where they're pea-sized, BB-sized, that sort of thing. But they're quite common in the area.
Hey, can you kind of give me a quick description of what a trilobite looks like? And how does someone know that they're holding a trilobite?
What the best living example, and it's not really closely related, is the little pill bugs that you find in your basement or out in rotted wood where they curl up into a little ball. That's what trilobites look like. Larger, marine, but basically that same body type, an oval body type with a shell.
I always see these things that kind of look like they're branches of some kind.
Yes.
What are those?
That is bryozoan. They are animals, actually. They are probably more closely related to worms than to coral, but they look like coral. They build colonies, and in fact, we have a very dedicated member of the dry dredgers who picks up all of these branches in buckets full and glues them back together. And so if somebody – if you stop out the geofair, you're likely to see some of his reassembled bryozoan reef sorts of structures.
Bryozoans, how far back do those date?
450 million years.
Okay, and the trilobite, is that about the
same? They're all –
yeah, all from that same period.
This period is known pretty much throughout the world as the Cincinnatian, simply because there are so many fossils here. And when you talk about 450 million years ago in the Earth's history, you're talking about the Cincinnatian.
So, Jack, did he incur your wrath in any of this?
Well, yeah, he kind of blew off the echinoderms that I like, but that's okay. Greg and I differ on other aspects, too, about how to collect, but that's kind of an inside joke, using bags and buckets to collect in.
Coffee cans. Coffee cans are the best way to collect.
Right. Yeah, the bryozoan thing Greg was talking about, people bring them in and they want to know what they are. They look like twigs, so people think they're plants. They got holes in them, multiple holes, and people think they're corals. People think they're bones, fossil bones. So the key to at a bryozoan, to look at one, whatever the physical shape of it is, because some are flat and like a leaf even, they have very tiny, tiny, tiny little holes. And if you look at them under magnification, that hole is just a hole. If you look at a coral, the openings are generally bigger, and the hole has little septa, little ridges radiating out from the middle in the coral. So they look different.
Is there a site in Cincinnati that's most prolific for fossil collectors?
No, that's the thing about Cincinnati. We had a young paleontologist who was hired from England to the Cincinnati Museum Center about 10 years ago, 15 years ago, and when he arrived here, he said his colleagues were so jealous because in England, they know of Cincinnati as the place where fossils roll down the street when it rains. And that's
– I haven't seen that yet.
It is literally true. Mm-hmm. At Geofair, we have an identification booth. People bring in anything. You can bring in jewelry. You can bring in minerals. You can bring in fossils, and you can have it identified. The first year I was doing this and going through training, one of the veteran identifiers said, if somebody brings something in and says, I found this in my backyard, it's from Cincinnati.
Hmm. Have we ever had something that that turned up, maybe a construction crew unearthed it or something like that, turned out to be something really big?
Have been some construction projects that were not really held up, but they opened up real deposits. For instance, when Florence Mall was being built, they moved the work over to another side to allow paleontologists to get in and dig up a bed of some of these echinoderms that Jack's into. In particular, it was a type of echinoderm called a crinoid, which Jack is really into, which are known as sea lilies. They're related to starfish. They have they almost look like flowers, but they are rooted to the ground, have a stalk, and have this starfish-type head that collects food out of the air. And there were thousands of them found when Florence Mall was being built. And I believe those sheets are now at the museum center.
Yeah, some of the material's at the museum, some of it's still at UC, and some of it's at the research center at the museum.
John, when it comes to minerals, I mean, you mentioned eastern Indiana has some good sites. What are some of the other good sites to look for minerals in this area?
In this area, northern Kentucky, particularly as you get out towards the Kentucky-Illinois border, there's an area mineralogically known as the Southern Illinois-Kentucky Fluorspar District. And that area, again, is a type of Mississippi Valley-type deposit. Those mines date from the late 1800s. Unfortunately, they closed most of the fluorite mines down in the early 80s. And for the first time since that time, a new operation has just begun, specifically looking for fluorite. And for most of the 20th century, fluorite from that deposit, from that area, fueled the steel manufacturing in the East Coast. So fluoride is actually used industrially as a flux for iron smelting.
What kind of things can people learn about the history of this area from the minerals that are around here?
Well, that's a very interesting question. The area historically has been very important not only for oil and gas. In fact, one of the first oil booms in the United States was up in Findlay in northern Ohio, but also the minerals associated with the area, the fluorite from the Mississippi Valley type deposits, iron from iron deposits, particularly up in northern Michigan in the Marquette area, and coal from the East Coast or from eastern Ohio and Pennsylvania. Those three things merged together in terms of the history of steel in the United States. And so it has a very interesting history in terms of the use of minerals and the development of those mineral deposits.
Mm-hmm. And Jack, as far as what we can learn from the fossils in this area, what kind of lessons do we get from what we find in Cincinnati?
Well, the thing that you can find out is what happens with ancient environments. We can tell by looking at some of the rocks in this area that how deep the water was, how warm it was. As Greg mentioned earlier, these are all marine creatures. We know they're not freshwater creatures. There's even some rock strata out east toward Maysville that shows earthquakes, not at the time of this deposit, but sometime later. There's also some deposits they call seismocytes, which are caused by earthquakes, where the strata's all kind of tumbled up and strange looking. So you can study the ancient environments.
Yeah, we probably ought to mention, we've been talking about the Cincinnati has a big gap. If you go through the cut in the hill on the way to the airport and you're looking at these walls of rock, those walls are 450 million years old. But Cincinnati is also somewhat known for deposits that are under 100,000 years old. So Big Bone Lick and the Ice Age fossils that you can find here as well, mastodons, mammoths, wild pigs, giant ground sloths, all of that, those are also found in the Cincinnati area. And so everything from 450 million years then disappears, and the fossil record reconnects here.
Wow.
In Cincinnati.
That's quite a time gap.
Yes.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation, and we will continue it after this. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining us to explore the world of fossils, rocks, and minerals in the upcoming GeoFair are Miami University Department of Geology and Environmental Earth Science Professor of Mineralogy, Dr. John Rekavan, Jack Kalmeyer, President of Dry Dredgers, an Association of Amateur Geologists and Fossil Collectors, and Dry Dredgers Past President Greg Hand. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Greg and Jack, when you're looking for fossils, is there something in particular that you're looking for? Do you specialize in certain types?
Well, As Greg mentioned, I have specialized in the echinoderms. Mostly it's because of luck that when I finally started finding them, it's like, wow, these are really neat. So it was something to study. It takes time and experience to know where to look, because they're just not popping up everywhere. A lot of the echinoderms tend to live in little groups. Greg mentioned the crinoids, the sea lilies. People say they lived in little gardens or whatever, where they're congregated in one spot. And if you happen to find a spot, you'll find a lot of them. But if you're not at that spot, you'll find none of them. So they get spread out. And there are people who do like the trilobites, and sometimes that's all they'll pick up is trilobites. But there's so much else here that I always found fascinating, because I wanted to know more than just about one thing. My old phone thrust was to find out about the environment, how they live, what live together, and why. And in the Cincinnati, you can do that.
What do you do with a good fossil once you find it?
Ultimately, what you want to do is this is one of those areas, like astronomy, where amateurs can actually contribute to science. And so when you're picking up a specimen, you're not just picking up a beautiful specimen. You're picking up data. And so keeping good notes about where you found something and its location in relation to other things, if you keep that information, ultimately you can pass your collection on to a permanent repository like the Cincinnati Museum, and it will provide data for people to research ancient environments for centuries to come.
Same thing with minerals?
Absolutely. In fact, I would say 80% of all new minerals that are discovered, and about 50 new minerals are discovered every year and then described by science, probably 80, 90% of those are actually discovered by amateur mineralogists or collectors. Because they're in the field, they're looking at new things all of the time, and then they'll bring them to scientists if they know of them, and that's how we work out the structures and the chemistry of new materials. There's a gentleman who's a good friend of mine, Joe Marty, who's discovered over – he's a microscopist. He's not a mineralogist or geologist. He's discovered over 200 new minerals to science just as a hobbyist.
So don't take what you're finding for granted.
Not at all.
And to answer the question in perhaps a negative way, don't demolish it.
Absolutely. There's
a lot of amateurs who find something and it's got a little bit of limestone stuck to it or it's got some shale stuck to it and they think,
oh, it's a piece of garbage. Yeah, it's not that good.
No, actually worse. They think acid will help. And the whole thing dissolves and then they're left with nothing.
That brings up a good point. Acid's not a good idea. Should you take a wire brush to these things or just...
Very rarely. For most fossils that you find in Cincinnati, water, maybe a little bit of soap, and a toothbrush are all you need. And if you run into a particularly recalcitrant specimen, you might want to talk with one of the more experienced members at one of the clubs. And that's the reason why we have these clubs in town, is to share the knowledge. And so some of the more experienced ones can show you how to delicately clean a specimen.
In fact, that's something that you'll find at GeoFair this weekend. If you want to talk to experts in the field or actually look at examples of preparing specimens of fossils and minerals, they'll be on display there.
John, you know, you're teaching at Miami University. How much interest is there today in geology and earth science? And where do graduates usually go for careers in those fields?
To answer your first question, in terms of the interest, I actually had two students, one a high school student, junior, who's interested in mineralogy. And like all of us, or many people, many of your listeners, as children, we get interested in minerals and fossils. They're all around us, and they're very intriguing. Later on, if you continue in that hobby, it can be a stepping stone into the science as a career. In fact, that's how I got involved in mineralogy as a career, because I was a collector as a young kid. We had a fellow that came in to visit on Tuesdays, a junior in high school, and knows that he wants to go into mineralogy. And so he's looking for a place to go now. We had this morning a student from the University of Cincinnati who's interested in going on to graduate work in paleontology. We just hired a new paleontologist in our department, Carrie Taylor. She's a expert on local fossils and food webs, and he's going to pursue his master's degree and then potentially later on a PhD. In the two areas, I can't speak too much for paleontologists. Maybe Jack and Greg can. But in terms of mineralogy or just geology, our major employers are in the environmental industry and in natural resource development, particularly oil and gas, but also minerals as resources. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the in paleontology, we have, from a job standpoint, of course, you have professors at universities, curators at museums and whatnot, and the oil industry was always popular for a paleontologist-type job, too, because they're looking at the fossils in a strata to tell you where oil might be found as well. I kind of like to brag on our club as far as people getting involved. We have children in our club. One of our younger members is going to be starting kindergarten this coming year. And we have, is Steven 90 yet?
He's close to 90.
Yeah, we have a member of that vintage as well. And one of our younger members years ago, I think she was probably 8 or 10 when she started, she's now a PhD student over at Indiana University in Bloomington in paleontology. So it works. You get the interest and it just keeps going.
John says he started at a young age. How old were you when you started, Jack?
Oh, well, I was certainly under 10.
Likewise.
What
got you hooked on this?
Well, I got hooked later in life. As things go with kids, things come and go. And I got into engineering school. I really wanted to be a paleontologist, but a guidance counselor said, no, don't do that. So I became an engineer. And then later on in life, I met another person through another one of my crazy hobbies. And turned out he had a vast fossil collection from Cincinnati because he grew up here. And as adults, we got hooked again and started collecting in the 80s, over-the-top collecting. So we'd go out probably only once a weekend, but we'd be out all day long until we could drop or couldn't see, and built up some nice collections that way.
Mm-hmm. So, Greg, tell us about the GeoFair. Now, that's been around since 1965. Is that right?
That's right. The show was actually started by the Mineral Society. They had their first couple of shows at the University of Cincinnati campus. It later moved to the Pepsi-Cola bottling plant. It was at downtown for a while at the Convention Center. It was at Cincinnati Gardens for many years. So if you're familiar with shows at those locations, this is the same show. But it's essentially an opportunity for thousands of people, and there are probably 6,000-7,000 people who attend this show, have an opportunity to see retail dealers. There are areas where you can swap specimens. There are lectures on minerals and on fossils. There are amateur displays, so you can see people who have exactly the same background and experience you have, who have put up really, really impressive displays. There are opportunities to get any specimen of any sort of earth science material that you bring in identified. And there is an education area where you can get all the requirements for a scout merit badge or those sorts of things. And if you're one of these 10-year-old kids, 8-year-old kids who's just starting out, you get a free collection.
Okay.
You can walk out of there with 12 mineral specimens and 12 fossil specimens.
Is this pretty popular among kids? Do you see a lot of kids getting into this?
This is a real family show. There is everybody there from kids in strollers to people in wheelchairs going through here. Lots of families go through because this is one of those activities where you can be outside enjoying the weather, engaging in a hobby that could lead to a career, could lead to knowledge, and nobody's keeping score.
How many different vendors?
At least 50.
At least 50. And what about how many museums are involved?
There's about a dozen museums that actually have displays there. And a very popular booth is the Ohio Geological Survey. They produce a ton of material. And so if you are just getting into this field, you can tell the people who want to learn more about it because they just take reams of brochures out of the Ohio Geological Survey.
Yeah, does it surprise Jack after 51 years this is still as popular as it is?
Oh, no. I think it's fascinating. I've got some of my neighbors hooked that they're going to be coming as well. So one of the things we've done here on this show, we emphasize education. It's not just a commercial show. The educational component, Greg mentioned quite a bit of it, but in the last few years we decided to allow educators in for free. So if you're a teacher and you have a little teacher ID and you come with a paying adult, you get in for free. And, of course, the other adult can get a $2 off coupon off the internet. So everybody saves. And we want to encourage education in the earth sciences by doing that.
Well, Greg, Jack, and John, thank you for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Miami University Department of Geology and Environmental Earth Science Professor of Mineralogy, Dr. John Rakovin, Jack Kalmeyer, President of Dry Dredgers, an Association of Amateur Geologists and Fossil Collectors, and Dry Dredgers Past President Greg Hand. GeoFair 2016 is sponsored by the Cincinnati Mineral Society and Dry Dredgers. It takes place at the Sharonville Convention Center on Saturday and Sunday, and you can find a link to more information at wvxu.org. Coming up, we'll take a look at the history of Northside and how that Cincinnati neighborhood is changing. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.